He is Robin Leach. This is Car Keys.
I'd like to start this week's show for our listeners by talking about the pending or maybe current demise of the production of one of my favorite, they call a small SUV, which is a Jeep Cherokee. I think it is built at the plant in, I had it in my head, but I can't think of it. The plant is apparently down and the production has ceased. So there will be no more Jeep Cherokees as I have known it, and as most of the listeners, if any of the listeners have them, have known it, which is too bad for what I think is a very well-designed and functioning vehicle in the Jeep lineup.
I'm sorry for your loss.
What?
I am sorry for your loss.
Oh. It was targeted between the Jeep Grand Cherokee and the Jeep Compass, and the Jeep Compass is still being produced and has been upgraded significantly electronically for this year's model, which is 2023, of course. The Grand Cherokee now comes in really two sizes, regular and long wheelbases, and then you jump from the Jeep Grand Cherokee, which once was called the Cherokee, up to the Grand Wagoneer. The Grand Cherokee, as we now know it, is actually a pretty nice vehicle overall, but it is bigger than the Cherokee. And I, for one, as an owner of a Cherokee, would never buy it in lieu of or in place of a Cherokee if I were to let my Cherokee go. But it has stopped production. I have talked to several people who have Cherokees, and I'm sort of polling them as to their fondness of the car. And I have not run into anybody that has disliked it yet. And I have been telling them if they've owned an older one, that if they want to try to get a newer one before they disappear completely off the market, they have to go search what dealer inventories currently exist or might be in the pipeline, because they will not be able to order something to a spec that they might like if they know what they're doing with the Cherokee itself. That's it for that particular topic.
Well, let me chime in for a second here. I think it was probably time for an upgrade to the model, to the product itself. I mean, it's a good product. There's no doubt about that. But it's a close to 10-year old design now. It came out, I think, in circa 2015. So it was time for an upgrade, or just stop production altogether. The interesting part, I think, is to see what they do with the nameplate, because the Cherokee nameplate has been around with Jeep for far longer than this last model you've had a few examples of. Yes. The Cherokee of the 90s was a very popular car and still is. It was a more rugged SUV. And actually, I know it well, having driven one for tens of thousands of miles.
They were bulletproof.
I just can't imagine that Stellantis is going to let the nameplate fade away. So I'm sure it'll come back in one form or another in the foreseeable future.
I agree.
And by the way,
it may come back as an electric vehicle, because of course, as we watch this transition into the electric vehicle world, be it a plug-in hybrid type or a pure electric, it would be logical for the Jeep Cherokee to be designed upward into the electric vehicle world as a suitable replacement for its nameplate, I think.
Well, there you go. Now you can get your first electric vehicle in a couple of years.
Well, there is a Jeep vehicle that is being unveiled in Europe that has got an electric powertrain to it. I don't know much about it, so I can't talk intelligently about it on this particular segment of our show. I want to move on. The New York Auto Show is going to be going on this year, and I will be going to it. It's in April. And Jay, I don't know whether you are going to try and go to it or not, but it's probably going to be dominated by electric vehicles. It'll be interesting to see just what percentage of the show is retaining the fossil fuel line of vehicles. You've got electric lines of Mustangs being developed, and you've got electric lines of several other cars being developed. So what they will be showing in New York this year, I will be interested in seeing. And it's only, it's a little less, a little more than a month away. So.
Yeah, I'll be interested to go. And I'm also interested to see if the newest electric vehicle product line will be present at the show. As VinFast, the Vietnamese company, just launched sales of its vehicles in California, I believe, just this past week. And, you know, I've heard of VinFast for a while. We know it's some billionaire who's, they've been manufacturing, I think, scooters, electric scooters for a while. I don't know much about the company, but did a quick search about them. And it's interesting to see that from the get-go, they are offering, I believe, four different vehicles, all SUV type, but ranging from a compact SUV to a full-size SUV, with prices going from $33,000 to just shy of $80,000 of starting prices. So it and pretty much a very simple product line: EV6, EV7, EV8, EV9. It'll be interesting to see how they do in this new automotive world.
Is it purely an electric, I mean, a U.S. company?
It's a Vietnamese company headquartered in Singapore, and they are currently building a factory in, I think it's North Carolina. So they are gonna produce vehicles here, which, as we all know, will help them with the tax credit that is the new tax credit, which is going to require
U.S. components
to be manufactured here in the U.S.
Yeah. So, what's going on with Lucid?
I don't know what is going on with Lucid. I saw
there's a lot of problematical things going on at Lucid about from production issues and big debt and all that. They did some price cutting along with Tesla and a couple others a few months ago. I don't know whether that's helping them or not. I can't get a fix on what their production current production capabilities are and whether they're actually meeting production goals. But you like this car a lot. I think it was a very interesting car too, but it was a very high-end priced car. In the electric vehicle world, I think it was over $100,000 at all levels, maybe except for a base level. But I thought I was feeling actually quite disturbed that if it didn't make it, it would be too bad for that company. But
honestly, I think if one of them is not going to make it, that would be Lucid, because I think the technology is there. It's a great product, but it's a full size sedan. And it, as you mentioned, the price range is in upward of $100,000 to $120,000. So, and I think no different vehicles in the pipeline, and certainly no cheaper vehicles in the pipeline. So I kind of don't see that. If anybody's not going to make it, I would say it's Lucid. But you know, what do I know?
The vehicle, so I thought you'd follow a little bit more closely than I have been. Rivian's the other company that's struggling with production. They've got orders, and aren't they also connected to a major high tech company Amazon or something?
Rivian's going to make it, if only because their biggest shareholder is his name Bezos, Jeff Bezos, and Amazon is their biggest customer with, you know, still 100,000 vehicles on order, which they've started to deliver. So I think all of that is going to make
Rivian make
it able to scale production fairly quickly. Yes, they're struggling a little bit right now, but I think in the long term, I have no doubts that they will survive. Plus, their vehicles sell. I mean, the SUV just started coming out, and you see them on the road. I mean, I have seen. And you have too. We have seen several. I never know. RS1, RT, the truck is the RT1.
The pickup RS1. Truck is the RT1, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. And the RS1 is the SUV, and they're you're starting to see them. So, and the full size SUV is certainly something that is appealing to the public.
I agree. And all the tests, on the Rivians have been superior to anything going in the all-wheel drive segment of the vehicle lines, especially with the pickup trucks. Having read a few tests, long-term tests or major tests of the pickup truck, it just seems to have it all over regular SUVs or pickup trucks with four-wheel drive systems, simply because it's got, what, it doesn't have four motors, one motor at each wheel.
Correct.
And I don't know how many people are actually ever going to utilize the capabilities that this truck can provide people. I don't think you'll see them on the Rubicon Trail, because I'm not sure where they can fit between the boulders on that trail, although I've never been on it, so I don't really know. And but the capability in just all around bad weather with their drivetrain of four motors, one motor per wheel, is just awesome.
Yeah, and the truck is apparently has a better ride quality than the SUV, because it has a longer wheelbase. The wheelbase is, I think, 14 inches longer than on the SUV. And the truck is also not only known for its outstanding off-road capabilities, but it's also one of the most comfortable vehicles on the planet, bar none. It's talked about as having S-Class Mercedes ride quality. So, and speaking of large electric SUVs, although there was a comparison test in, I think, Car and Driver a couple months ago, between it was a duel between the Rivian and the BMW, and there is a large full-size BMW electric vehicle available right now.
Yeah.
And interestingly, the performance and overall characteristics of the BMW were totally on par with the Rivian.
Really?
Include, you know, power,
range.
I don't have the numbers, and I haven't seen the article lately. So I'm just from memory, and I believe it actually, Car and Driver actually rated it the number one SUV between the two of them. So, and again, it goes to my point where I think it's easier to identify electric vehicles from manufacturers that manufacture just that. And this is where I think that Tesla's had a huge marketing advantage over the last close to a decade.
Since inception,
yeah. Is that, you know, it's pretty clear that they are electric vehicles. If you look at BMWs, Audis, some of their new electric vehicles just look like they're fossil fuel.
They do. Yes, they do.
Anyway, so and lastly, you know, about large full size SUVs. Volvo is coming out with the EX90, which should look very much, you know, even a more, slightly more futuristic, slick Scandinavian design full size SUV. It characteristics look great. It's not cheap. It's also going to be pushing, you know, the $90,000 mark. But you know, that's what vehicle costs these days.
That is. Except for the Bolt and
yes,
a few vehicles from Nissan and Toyota, I think, who are trying to produce vehicles that are more affordable, whatever that may be. I don't think there's an electric vehicle. Well, you used to follow the Bolt, and you could say you used to be able to get a Bolt for $27,000, but this was years ago when dealers couldn't sell them. And now they're back maybe between $38,000 and $48,000. I'm not sure, but they're still a very practical small wagon type of SUV or electric vehicle. And
yes,
very practical for around town usage.
Absolutely. Where range matters a lot less, by the way. And yet they still have like a 260-mile range. So I'm still a firm believer. And I think that, you know, if you get these vehicles, even if they are in the $30,000, $35,000 range,
you know, and you, and this new tax credit is, you know, somewhere around $10,000, it's still going to make it a very attractive proposition.
I do. I agree.
So speaking of electric vehicles and alternatives, there's this whole thing about synthetic fuels. I don't know if you followed this just recently. Germany and Italy are not ready to approve the 2035 all-electric vehicles and the ban on fossil fuels.
There's and, a big pushback, isn't there? From many
there is a big pushback, and yeah. Germany is using the argument they want to see in the legislation. They want to see a provision for synthetic fuels. And it's interesting to note that Porsche has been very actively involved in, you know, using manufacturing these synthetic fuels and using them in their race cars. And actually, I think it's next year or the following year, or maybe even this year, I'm not quite so sure, but the Porsche Cup, which is a race series using a Porsche 911s only, is going to be powered by their synthetic fuel.
Jay, explain to our listeners what the synthetic fuel is concocted of, because I'm not following it at all. So I think it's fascinating.
So I failed chemistry in high school and never took it in college. So I'm going to be very careful here. But from what I understand, so Porsche has invested in this company, and I forget its name, but the manufacturing plant is in South America, in Chile. And the synthetic fuel basically is about breaking down hydrogen and water, basically, you know, into hydrogen and oxygen, and then taking the hydrogen component and mixing it, and I'm using the term mixing it loosely, with carbon dioxide, the infamous CO2 emissions, and that's found in the air, and obviously readily and more than readily available and in the air. So it sounds simple. It's done in Chile because they need a lot of electricity to produce the product. And Chile just has a lot of wind, and they're producing the electricity with wind turbines. And there you have it. So the production is still, you know, extremely small, but Porsche is banking on it and the availability of the synthetic fuel to power their cars beyond 2035.
Is it a liquid, basically? Yeah. Like gasoline?
Yep.
And so it would be stored, presumably, in gasoline-type tanks or underground tanks, and if they ever got the production up to where they could actually supply enough for this situation?
Again, the production is really, it's
minuscule.
Minuscule.
Yeah.
But it's interesting, and, you know, we'll see where that goes. And there may be hope for the... internal combustion
engine
after all. Slight hope.
Okay. We had a storm recently in the Northeast. They keep coming from the West, and there may be another one coming too. Any update on safety driving techniques? Because, you know, the storm that most recently hit us left a lot of snow up in Vermont, left no snow in lower Fairfield County. And right around us, our broadcast area, it seems to be that people seem to think that we got between 2 and 6 inches of snow in varying elevations. I commented last week about thin tread conditions being very dangerous in driving in amongst this kind of snow, because you don't have much grip on the road. And you don't have much, and treads, deeper treads give you more grip than less tread depth. And I'm just about to replace finally a set of tires that came original equipment on one of the Cherokees I have with new ones, because we drove this vehicle. I had the occasion to drive this vehicle in the storm up in Vermont. And let me tell you, it was slithering around the road and the traction on the road, if unless it was bare pavement, plowed to bare pavement levels, was very, very dangerously ineffective. So well, that, go ahead.
We're back to, what tires should we have on our vehicles in the winter? And even though I don't put snow tires on my cars, snow tires are still the way to go. But as we are heading, getting closer to spring, we'll leave the snow tire conversation until
till next year,
till next fall.
Next fall, right?
Yeah.
But the problem here, I have one vehicle in which I have two sets of tires, and the interesting thing is, I got the extra wheels and extra tires over 2 years ago. I put them on. They had a better snow tread than the original equipment tires, and I have yet to take them off. It's very easy with them, and it's just a lazy situation. Why bother?
Your case, Robin, it's very easy because you have multiple Cherokees, so you can have one with winter tires, and you drive that Jeep in the winter, and then you drive the summer tire Jeep in the summer, and you probably have one for in between seasons too. So.
Well, the problem with that, Jay, is that one of the Jeeps has 17-inch wheels on it and the other has 18-inch wheels on it. So they're not just, two vehicles. You have one kind and one vehicle and that you can do that. But that's not everybody's ability. So the question is, you were big on the special snow tire tread for wintertime. And you were right about the tires that have the rubber compounds that are really effective in snow and to a certain degree on icier conditions and the non-winter tread compounds. Tires are getting pretty expensive, especially as these manufacturers keep putting larger wheels on cars. And, you're up to some of them are now up to 20-inch, 21-inch and 22-inch wheels. And I don't know what a 21, 22 or 20, 21 or 22 tire costs over the old scale 16, 17 inch tires, but I know it's more. And along with everything else going up, people can't afford anything like some of these tire prices to be able to have two sets of wheels. Jay?
Yeah. Yep, I think you've made the point.
Well, you have any more safety things? We keep talking about safety and it's more or less the same thing going on.
Safety features in vehicles. I was reading about the safety vehicles in the new Volvo, and it has obviously the crash detection, auto braking feature that most new cars have now, but they actually advertise the pedestrian and cyclist detection. So when you have a pedestrian crossing your way or a cyclist, I guess the Volvo will hit the brakes as well, which is a pretty cool feature. And I know we've gone back and forth, and I made the case last week. I think that I'm actually a believer in lane assist when it comes to highway driving. So
yeah, you are.
Get familiar with all the safety features in the car and use them.
I agree. And then let's transfer as we finally get to the final part of the show. Tesla's been having some trouble with their supposed all automatic driving. They're under big scrutiny from the highway safety transportation people. And they're being challenged as to whether their driving system is actually true level 4 capability or not. They've had a couple of crashes into safety vehicles like fire engines and ambulances. And my theory is that the strobe lights when they're on are confusing the radar systems in the Teslas, which is why they aren't reading those things properly.
Well, okay. Yes, that is, it is a known problem, but we've discussed this, some time ago. Yeah. Safety vehicle lights are an issue.
They blind the radar, I think.
They blind the radar and they blind people driving cars. I mean,
they sure do.
So
I think we're just about through. So I'm looking forward to reporting in future shows on the auto show. And Jay, maybe you and I will go together to it or something. If you're
yes. Around. Yep. Let's get the dates and announce
it's the in
dates.
April, the second week in April, I think. and you and I can talk about it, and then we can talk about it to the people.
Sounds great.
Okay.
Robin Leach, Jada Markin.
Car Keys.
This was Car Keys.